The Ghost Catchers by Minerva Sweeney Wren or Meg McCauley. Chapter 1. I want to leave the House of Nod. Holy mackerel, that felt good to say. I, Marjorie, want to leave. Since I'm talking out loud to a microphone that I found in the trash, I may as well keep talking out loud to a microphone that I found in the trash. Let's pretend this soundstage is working. That you, my audience, are real. That you're listening. And that I'm not curled up in my secret spot in the attic, alone, listening to myself. This microphone feels amazing in my hands. I don't know who chucked this mic into the garbage cans in the alley on 5th Street, but I found it on my walk today, and I rescued it. It's a big, state-of-the-art microphone, the kind that looks like a small spaceship, like something you'd see Orson Welles use for one of his radio shows. It was amazing to find it here in my small town. It's too fancy for us. It has three letters running up the middle, all official. MSW. Although, I haven't heard of any stations that go by MSW. What I'm trying to say is, even though I'm only 16, and sitting on the wooden floor of a dusty attic that I'm not supposed to be in, this mic makes me feel like somebody. You might think I'm quite a chatterbox, imaginary audience, but the honest truth is, these are the most words I've said in succession this entire year. I like to talk, it's not that, it's just that I don't like to talk to the other members of the House of Nod. And while I'm complaining about them, I don't like listening to them either. I would much rather sit in the damp grass under the Smith's window on summer nights, listening in on radio shows when they don't know I'm there. Damp grass and a stiff neck are still better than the other members of the House of Nod. I love radio shows. That's what this is. The radio show of Marjorie. Well, except most radio shows have a cast, and I'm all alone. I know I'm only playing pretend, but I still feel prickles in my fingers and toes for admitting it. I would be in so much trouble if anyone heard this. I am not supposed to want to leave the House of Nod. But no one can hear me up here. This mic is warm. It's not plugged into anything, so it can't be working. I mean, I don't even have a transmitter or whatever those things are called. Besides, if I was really broadcasting, someone from the House of Nod would hear this. Thank goodness this is all pretend, not real. Thank goodness no one in the entire universe will ever actually hear these words spoken out loud someday and think, wait a minute, Marjorie, I'm here. I'm actually here. Don't give up. Don't stop talking. I'm sure the mic is just warm from my hands being cupped around it. But I don't know. Bill, that's the leader of the House of Nod, Bill, says that there is nothing spiritual in the entire world. We have only science. There is no God, no fairies, no werewolves, and certainly no magic microphones. What a goof I'm being. A goof and a dope, talking to nobody and breaking all the rules of the House of Nod. But damn it all to heck, I'm having fun. What else can I tell you about so the radio show doesn't end here? Well, let's see. I have been talking about trash. Always riveting. I didn't just find this microphone. No, indeedy-do, for my next reveal on the Marjorie Radio Show, I will bring you the other strange thing that I found. I like going through trash. Don't tell anyone, okay? It's where I find the best newspaper clippings. I find out about the war that way, the one that's going on in Europe. Oh, it's April of 1940, in case anyone in my imaginary audience wanted to know. Anyway, I found a newspaper, right? Good old newspaper doing its job, bringing us news. Normally I leave them in the bin after I read them, but I sneaked a tiny piece of one home today. It was in the advertisement section. I ripped it carefully, rolled it up like a cigarette, and hid it in my sleeve. I think it must be fake, a clever ad for a radio show or something, but it says, "Do you have ghosts?" please call the Ghost Catchers, GC-50503. We eliminate spooks free of charge. I mean, have you ever heard anything crazier in your life? I just put my chin on my hand, and now I'm staring out the window in rapture. Ghosts aren't real. I'm not allowed to believe in God, sure, but not even the people in church get to believe in ghosts. Ghosts are off limits for everybody. Speaking of, I am glad I don't have to go to church. No offense. Peach hats and gloves and organ music just don't look much better than living in the House of Nod. Oh, it's not that I don't think God wouldn't be exciting. Bill says God isn't real, and Bill is smarter and better than most people, so God must not be real. But if God was real, I bet God is as exciting as a thunderstorm. It's just that I think even God isn't allowed to be exciting in church. Anyway, the Ghost Catchers. Trade that phrase around on your tongue for a minute and tell me it isn't exciting. The Ghost Catchers. Catching ghosts sounds more fun than doing nightly aerobic exercises on the stairs. Anyway, Bill says we shouldn't read newspapers because they'll fill our heads with bad ideas. Well, I think I caught a bad idea. I think I'm infected with terrible, wicked, insolent life. And now I want to try things. It stopped raining. I'm looking through the tiny round window at the peak of the attic, out into town. The tops of the trees are silvery and slippery with rain. I can see the movie theater from here. I saw the posters today on my walk. The theater is playing Tugboat Mickey for Mr. Disney and Irene, which is apparently a musical and looks just scandalous. I'm not allowed to go to the movies. Movies aren't for girls like me. But for a long time now, I've been sneaking up here to the attic when I'm supposed to be in bed. What if I sneaked further tonight? Oh, I have to go. Mother's calling. I came back. If you were worried that that was the end of the Marjorie Radio Show, it wasn't. There's more. I know I'm supposed to be all grown up. I know I'm supposed to be mature and not pretend things. But something in me opened earlier today, just imagining that someone wanted to listen to me. So I came back, and I'm here again. This microphone is the first bit of hope I've had in a while, and I'm going to keep holding on to it with both hands. Well, what happened between then and now? First of all, I went downstairs because my mother was calling. Normally, I can't visit the attic during the day, but everyone was getting glammed up for a visitation, so I knew I wouldn't get caught. I met my mother downstairs in the kitchen. "Oh, there you are," she said. She immediately ran her fingers over my hair, possessive, making sure each curl of frizz was clamped back down to my head. "You have to look your best, you know, for the visitation." "Of course," I said. "You look so beautiful in pink," she said. "I hate pink." My mother flurried around the kitchen, checking her own appearance one more time in a mirror that hung on the wall. "This is the perfect life for us, isn't it, darling?" I swallowed and nodded. "Mother," I said, "why do you love the House of Nod so much?" That came dangerously close to admitting that I didn't love the House of Nod. My mother tucked my hair behind my ear suddenly, so tender, and she said, "In the real world, all little girls have to grow up. But here, you'll be mine for the rest of your life. Here, you'll never leave me." I nodded. "I'm never going to leave you, Mother, I promise." "Of course you won't. You'll never leave me. You'll always be mine." She looked so beautiful today. I loved her like this. When she put makeup on and curled her golden hair in perfect piles on top of her head, she wore a pink skirt and jacket. The sun glowed behind her. I memorized her, pretended that this was the mother I knew all the time. I reminded myself that this was why I stayed. For moments like this, when she tucked my hair behind my ear so lovingly. When she was this, Mother. Now that I'm telling you this, she doesn't seem that wonderful. But you have to understand, she's all I have. Well, let's shuffle off into the parlor, shall we? She said. It's visitation time. I don't like visitation. I imagine it's even more boring than church. Today was me, and Bill, and my mom, and 7 of the other adults. Not everyone has to attend visitation, but my mother usually makes me. I noticed my older sister Joan and my little brother Arthur, both 2 years apart from me, so 18 and 14, weren't here. Ugh, maybe my mother is sensing that I want to leave. Our visitors, or poor unsuspecting victims, as I like to call them, are people from the neighborhood who come calling. Sometimes they want to learn more about the House of Nod. Sometimes they just want to visit a relative of theirs, someone who recently joined the House of Nod, and is one of us now. Well, the visitors don't realize no one is allowed to come over without Bill present. These relatives think that they'll come over for a donut and a cup of coffee with their sister, and then they have to sit in the parlor with literally all of us staring at them like bugs for 2 hours. Most of them don't come back. Usually Bill won't stop talking about the House of Nod, and they don't even get to talk to their relative anyway. Well, today was really exciting, because the Johnsons hadn't heard of the House of Nod before, and they were new in town, and maybe, just maybe, they would love our way of life and want to join. So we sat there. It was incredibly awkward. Helen, the woman, and Clyde, her 10-year-old son, sat stiffly, with all our eyes on them. And Bill? I think Bill has learned how to not blink. I almost admire him for it. Bill gazed into Helen like he wanted to scoop her soul with a garden trowel. Instead of staring at Helen, I found myself staring at Bill. His hair is always a little too sleek, and I really hate his upper lip. I really hate Bill's upper lip. It drives me crazy. I think Bill's upper lip is a clue to everything that's wrong with Bill. And if that sounds dumb, picture Bill. Bill's a tall man with a pioneer hero chin. He's got a jaw that could turn rocks into chewing gum. He's got a wide smile. Bill, with his big head and square jaw, is meant to have a big, jolly beard. He's meant to have a kind-hearted mustache that takes up half his face. Instead, Bill shaves meticulously, and in the center of his upper lip, well, you know that tiny hollow everyone has at the top of their lips, just under their nose? The Cupid bow triangle, the thing that makes that teardrop shape between your nostrils and your mouth. Well, Bill's is skinny. Too skinny. It's sharp, like someone folded paper too tight to make it. It's the sort of lip that makes him look like a yuck. I mean, he just does. The man looks like a yuck. It's a disgusting lip. You just feel wrong inside when you look at it, like you're looking at a splitting, broken bone. I can't blame the man for his silly lip. Lots of men look much more dapper with a little more facial hair. Bill, as he was meant to be, wouldn't have that problem. Bill is a man destined for a friendly, face-saving beard. But Bill shaves. He's smooth and babyish and stringy on purpose. Like he had an inner Paul Bunyan, who was jolly and kind and loved pancakes and plaid shirts. And then he killed his inner Paul Bunyan. With an axe. I realized I had been staring at Bill's disgusting upper lip far too long. I went back to staring at poor Helen. "You're all wearing pink," Helen stammered finally. "Astute observation, Helen. A room full of grown men and women, and yes, we were all wearing pink." "Yes, well, pink is the color of joy, Helen," Bill said. "We are filled with joy. You see, here at the House of Nod, we believe we have to earn our joy. That's very important. That's the core of all we do here. Joy has to be earned. So we have denial days. Perhaps you've seen us around town running our errands, wearing gray and looking sad. Well, those are denial days. On those days, we reflect. But every other day is joy day, and today is joy day, and you see how happy we are. You see us wearing pink. This way. We all get to celebrate together." "And we do have so much joy," Maribel, one of the women, said. "My life changed forever when I chose to come here." Helen, you really must join us, my mother said. My children have never been so well behaved. We've been here for 4 years, ever since Bill started the House of Nod. When my husband died, I didn't know what I would do, but now I'm here and my children are well looked after and we have 3 good meals a day, and we all live in this beautiful mansion. Think of it, Helen. So many families and bright minds all in one gorgeous home. And most importantly, my mother stole a glance at Bill, as if checking to see whether or not she was earning his approval with this speech. We're changing the way we think about the world. We're modernizing life. We're making the best choices. We're regimenting our existence. We live in a mansion, not just in reality, but also in our minds. I don't think Helen knew what to do with this information about mansions. Yes, I did think this was a large apartment complex from the street, she said. No, my mother said. This is the House of Nod, a place that will change you forever. She turned to me. Isn't it just exquisite here, Marjorie? Isn't it just the happiest you've ever felt? The happiest I have ever felt was hiding alone with a sore caboose in a moldy attic holding a trash microphone and daydreaming about running out to see a movie after dark. So earlier today, in other words. But I said, I'm so happy. Because I had to. Because I had to survive. After a few more excruciating minutes of hearing about the joys of our commune, Helen and her son made their excuses and practically fled out the front door. Bill walked after them, and when Helen tried to shut the door, he stopped the door with his hand. She let go of the knob. Then he stood on the front step and watched them go down the walk, a beaming smile on his face, his hands in his pockets. I couldn't see Helen, but I'm sure she looked over her shoulder, once, twice, maybe 3 times. Each time, she would have seen Bill, standing, smiling, insisting on watching her. After that, the visitation was over, and everyone tried harder than ever to pretend they were happy. It's deflating, of course, to see someone run away from your way of life.
It was deflating for me to see someone get out.
We cleaned up and chatted for about 10 minutes before I could sneak away. I was just about to walk back upstairs to find a quiet corner where no one would bother me when I spotted an announcement on the wall. Starting tonight, the notice said, men over the age of 30 will no longer have to do the nightly aerobic exercises on the stairs. Congratulations. I spun on my heel. I walked all the way to the other end of the House of Nod and I knocked on Bill's office door. I was a hornet's nest inside, but I knew I had to be meek with him because all the women are supposed to be meek. It's just how things are here. Come in, he said. I stepped inside. His office smelled stale. There wasn't a lot in it besides a large open window and a typewriter. The typewriter had tiny cobwebs on the keys. Bill? I asked. He was staring out the window, standing, like he was watching the town, the way he'd been watching Helen and her son. He turned and looked at me with a warm smile. Yes, little Marjorie. I told myself that I didn't hate him, that he was such a nice man, that he genuinely loved all of us, and that he didn't put a feeling like garbage ooze and snakes into the pit of my stomach. Can I ask why the men get to stop? May you ask, Bill said. May I said. Bill knew this was about the announcement. Well, little Marjorie, he sat down. He spread his hands on his knees, like we were seated around a campfire, and he was about to tell me an important tale. Men have more patience than women. You know that's what our nightly aerobic exercises are for, right? Building up patience. Suffering on purpose, so we can be better people. Well, the men have been demonstrating much better levels of patience, so they get a reward. But you women really need to keep trying. It is for you. Everything I do is for your benefit. I felt 3 different kinds of anger all at once. Rage at Bill for being so calm when I was so angry. Rage at Bill for claiming that the men were more patient, when a huge part of me knew this was entirely made up. The men aren't more patient than us. The men have it easier than us, and we are still more patient. And lastly, I was also angry because a core part of me, actually believed him. It scared me to death. I felt sick. Bill said, women aren't as good. And something in the depth of my heart nodded, yes. Because for the last 4 years, I've been taught to believe everything Bill says. He said I wasn't as good. So I said, yes. I just wanted to leave the room then, but I knew I couldn't just turn around and book it. I looked down at the ground and fiddled with my sleeves, pulling them past my wrists to have something to do with my hands. When I did, my rolled-up cigarette, my newspaper clipping, tumbled to the ground. Bill moved faster than I've ever seen a human move. With a swipe, he had it in his hands, and I wasn't sure it had even touched the floor. He stood up slowly, and he unrolled it. The ghost catchers, he muttered. He dropped the slip of paper suddenly, aggressively, down on the desk. He held his hands away from his body like he needed to wash them. Is this from a newspaper? What was I supposed to say? He looked up at me, and his eyes were so, so calm. No emotion in them, nothing. So then why the hell did I feel terrified? I'm going to have a conversation with your mother about this, little Marjorie, he said. After that, we did our nightly aerobic exercises on the stairs, those of us who had to do them, and then we went to bed. I tried not to think about tomorrow, or what would happen after my mother talked to Bill. Going to bed at least meant silence. Bed for us in the House of Nod isn't your standard affair. Our beds are like contraptions built into the wall, like bunks on a train. Every night at 5 p.m. we crawl in, and they slide the wooden door down across the opening, and they lock us in. There's enough space to sit up in, and if you're lucky, you can sneak a candle in there without them noticing. The doors get unlocked again at 5 in the morning, and the extra time is supposed to be used for sleep or meditation. Everyone gets locked in. All of us, like little insects, trying to change from slugs into fighting ants by dawn. The bunks are 3 high, up to the ceiling, and when we're shut in for the night, it just looks like a long, long hallway with impressive wooden paneling. Behind each panel, however, is a person waiting, asleep. I often think about the house below us, silent and empty. Imagine stumbling across us without knowing. You would think you were in a haunted house, an abandoned house. But there are people in the walls. The bunks are soundproof. I know this because I feel like I am in an Arctic wasteland each night after I'm shut in. Nothing. I don't hear the other beds shutting once the lid is down. But of course, this means no one else inside their bunks can hear anything either. Almost a year ago, I took the lock in my bunk apart and I broke it so that the key would still turn, but it would no longer latch shut. That night, I lay in my bed, my heart thumping, terrified that they would notice, but nothing happened. They couldn't tell. An hour later, I pressed my hands against the door and pushed it open, and then dropped down to the ground. And then it was me. I was the stranger in a haunted house, the human alive in a corridor of emptiness. That was the first time I ever feared the House of Nod, truly. The window at the end of the hall was open, and I could hear the people in the street outside, and then I remembered it was the 4th of July. I could see the pink of the sunset outside the window. A warm, green-scented wind blew in, smelling like barbecue. I heard sparklers. I remembered the 4th of July from our lives before the House of Nod. We'd always been poor and a little odd compared to other people, but we had seen fireworks. It suddenly struck me that our whole town was going to stay up late, eating cake and drinking pop from glass bottles and watching fireworks. Life rustled just outside that window. In contrast to that, the stillness of the hallway, the people shut up in living tombs. I don't puke a lot, but that night I puked. I ran to a bathroom on the other end of the House of Nod, and I puked in that toilet, just so that no one would hear me. We're dead, we're dead, we're dead, we're dead, I thought. When I thought of the fireworks, I knew how wrong it was. I was only 15 at the time, and I had been taught that all my thoughts were wrong and stupid, but I knew that. Somehow I knew it because of the fireworks. We have to get out of here. Sorry, I know I've been quiet for a long time. You're not supposed to have long pauses on a radio show. I have a lot to think about. That happened almost a year ago, but I'm still here. I am still in the House of Nod. Why haven't I run? I mean, I know why I haven't run. My family is here. I am only 16. But deeper, darker than that. I wonder if my mother is inside my head. If Bill is inside my head. What if I can't leave because their insect poison is in me now, and something deep down worships this place, fears it and reveres it, and physically cannot leave? Oh God, I think I might puke again. What if I can't leave? Sometimes I hate myself so much I can't stand it. There's a part of me that genuinely believes I am too stupid to do even the simplest thing, like buy something from the grocery store. We aren't taught to do anything here. I think Bill wants it that way. I am not sure I could survive in the real world, and I think he knows it. Well, anyway, after that 4th of July, I have sneaked out every night at 5. It's when I cease to feel like a member of the House of Nod. I am not one of the bugs below. I sneak up to the attic, to the place of boxes and dust where no one ever goes. I stare out the small round window, and I dream. I'm up in the attic now. It's about 6:30. It feels like the dead of night to me, but the people in town are probably just sitting down to dinner. Hey, imaginary audience? Do you ever feel like you don't have the courage to do something, and then the moment you bring another person into that problem, you feel better? Well, you've all made me feel better. Whether you're real or not. I mean, obviously you're not real. This microphone isn't even plugged in. But I don't feel alone. This has sparked something. Stirred something. What's the opposite of puking? It's like something really good is rising up. I should probably stop talking about puking or the network isn't going to renew my program. But I feel different. You can't do anything when you're alone. But I don't feel alone. Irene is playing at the theater 6 blocks from here. I'm going to climb out the window. I'm back. It's 10 o'clock at night. You will never guess what happened to me. You won't, you won't, you won't, you won't. I went to the movies. Well, obviously you were going to guess that part. I mean what happened afterwards. It only took 10 minutes of watching the movie before I felt rebellion swirling inside of me like too many cups of coffee. First the mic in the trash, then the ghost catcher's newspaper clipping, and then this movie. All incantations uttered to give me the courage to leave. Something is happening, and oh, the way this movie got into my blood. I can't express how it made me feel to see silk curtains and kissing and glamorous earrings and cocktails served in funny glasses. We are living in the most glorious decade that has ever existed. Motorcars and detectives and cartoons and musical movies. I have been missing all of it. In that movie theater, I white-knuckled my seat. I am alive. I'm alive. I don't want to miss anything. After the movie, I refused to go back home. I thought about just leaving, then, running. But I didn't have any money. And then what will my siblings do? Joan is getting a little evil, a little strange. But Arthur is just a nut and doesn't deserve to be left behind. I walked the sidewalks, enjoying the smell of the night, wondering what to do next. A light shone in a nearby house. My stomach curled. A pink, old-fashioned lamp sat in the window, shining out into the lilac bush in the front yard. It looked like a home, like light and warmth and life were happening inside. I imagined the ghost catchers were there, eating slices of pie and animatedly arguing about the movie I had just seen. I imagined I was with them, that I could smell the pecan sweetness of the kitchen table and feel the warmth of the stove on my hands. The ghost catchers. The ghost catchers. I can see them all in my head. Lipstick and dark green jackets and laughing as they smoke pipes. I have no idea. But it's like I've already met them. Like I already know I like them. In my head,
They're pirates and a circus and actors and con men and seance artists all at the same time. The bad ones, you know. The kind of people who choose adventure and the cosmic mystery on a daily basis. The ones who somehow don't get caught up in all the rules. I was dreaming of them, wishing I still had my newspaper clipping, when I overheard a group of 10-year-old boys all talking on the sidewalk up ahead. You wouldn't dare. I would so. I'll pay you $20 if you last the night. $20? You don't have $20. If I had $20, I could run away. I walked a little closer. I did so. I got it from my rich uncle for my birthday. If you last the night, all night, then it's yours. Ah, gee. Pardon me, gentlemen, I said. I clasped my hands behind my back. They swiveled with guilty, irritated faces, like they'd just been interrupted by a teacher at school. What's the bet about? I asked. Who asked you? One of the boys said. If I last the night, I said, can I have the $20? They looked at each other. A great big girl like you. What's the matter? I said. You don't think I can do it? I had no idea what we were even talking about here. You know the old Winston place? The boy said. No, I said. They glanced at each other. Mischief began to brew in their eyes. You don't? I'm new in town. Oh, yeah? The biggest boy grinned from ear to ear. Well, if you can stay in it tomorrow from sunset to sunrise, I'll give you $20. His friend smacked him. So what? The boy said. I will. He turned to his friends. It's not like she's going to be able to do it. Why not? I said. What's so bad about the Winston place? You know, the boy said. The legend. April 13th. Every year, like clockwork, on April 13th. Everything in me tightened, spellbound, aching for a glimpse of the uncanny. It was like I knew what they were about to say, like I was a plant opening the pores of her roots before a storm. I needed this. I wanted this. I couldn't breathe. This was everything I had been waiting for. The Winston house is haunted, the boy said. And tomorrow night, the ghost of Rebecca Wyeth is going to walk. Thank you for listening to The Ghost Catchers. Episodes air on the 13th of every month. You can support this show at patreon.com/SweeneyWren or through Venmo at MinervaSweeneyWren. Visit www.MinervaSweeneyWren.com for more adventures. And catch exclusive updates at Meg McCauley Inc. on Instagram and Twitter. This show is made possible by your support, and the impossible has only just begun.